I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, we're back for episode 105 of Digital Divination. As we get started, Ron, please repeat your normal disclaimer.
Thank you. I am an employee of Wizards of the Coast, and my opinions are my own and not theirs.
Excellent. How have you two been enjoying this unseasonably warm weather we had this weekend?
I went for two long walks this weekend around here in Vancouver. One. In a nice wooded area, which was nice and cool. There's a gnome trail that comes off that area, which is what goes into the wooded bit. And people have put little plastic and ceramic gnomes in the trees and put little displays everywhere.
Fun.
So every like couple feet, you look down. Oh, look, there's a little guy there, and there's a little fairy hanging from a branch. That was very nice. And then this afternoon, I walked up the main road, not the main road, but a main road. To the Target, and that was not very shaded and it got really hot.
are you supposed to bring your own gnomes to add to the gnome trail when you go?
I think you're allowed to do that, and Paul has a crochet gnome, lawn gnome, that I think she's gonna eventually put down somewhere. Nice.
But it's outdoor. You wouldn't want to leave a crocheted gnome outdoors, would you?
Someone left a Pokemon card on a tree.
I guess those are gonna get wet.
So it's gonna get wet, whatever.
What about you, Ron?
Well, I spent the afternoon doing the thing that gives, I think, maybe the greatest delight to any middle-aged homeowner. I was pressure washing all afternoon.
Oh, jealous.
My fence, it's like painting with clean. I love it.
Yes. Wow. In fact, Deb and I were talking about, we were up at Camino Island this weekend,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to go back up next week, like Tuesday through the weekend. And we thought maybe we should bring our pressure washer up there because we have these guests coming over Easter. They're going to stay there and we want to make it nice and clean for them. So,
maybe I'll just bring my pressure washer and get to enjoy it.
Oh, wait a second. Wait, is that would work?
So, I mean, I really like pressure washing.
Well, the deck needs it pretty good, especially around the railing and stuff. So if you happen to bring it, that's okay. But I think we might need to take care of it before.
Ron, have you played Power Wash Simulator?
No, but my daughter loves it. And in fact, it's I was watching her play it the other day. And I'm like, that's a great idea, honey. I'm going to do that this weekend. And sure enough. Got into my shed, pulled out the old pressure washer, ran through it, made sure it was all good, which meant, right, this is the start of the spring. So I'm like, all right, well, this means I have to get all my hoses out, right? Which means I have to take the little winter covers off of them, get my hose racks back out and put on. I mean, it just ended up being one of my hose racks. When I took it down last fall for the winter, I took the whole hose rack down and I'm like, oh, I'm going to remember to buy another one of these next year because this one's no good. I need to put another one up. So I had to go get another hose. I mean, it ended up being kind of a huge ordeal, sort of one darn thing after another. The way that a lot of good like role-playing campaigns can be, it's like, oh, we're just going to go kill this dude in the castle. Nah, but first, don't we need to fit the secret way into the castle? And we can't learn about that till we go down the gnome trail in order to find out the secret way into the et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Wow, that sounds exciting. I don't enjoy pressure washing as much, maybe because I'm older and it tends to. First of all, we have this super heavy duty pressure washer that my wife got from work because they were getting rid of them, and so like when I'm doing the driveway and stuff, it really torques on my shoulder and stuff. I don't realize it at the time, but I'm working it so much. And then after 3 hours of pressure washing, it's like, oh man, now I'm all laid up for a while. So it's a kind of an age thing. You have something to look Fort.
You got to get some of the old man candy, aka yes. ibuprofen, to make sure.
Not allowed to. I'm not allowed to take that.
Oh, that's
that.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Kidney thing. But on the non-pressure washing front, we had a very exciting thing, which I think you and your family might be interested in as well. So I was actually working on a deliverable for a freelance job I'm working on. And my wife is outside working on the yard. She comes in and she looks out and says, oh, I just saw something out there. So we go out to the deck. And sure enough, just going by the buoys is a gray whale.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. It's and, that I mean, time.
Like 100 yards you know, away. It's like that close. And it goes up and it. You know, did the thing with the flukes, went down, it came, went up again and down again. And it, when it came up, it was so close. It was so calm out, which is one reason why it's easy to see, right? And you could hear it blowing.
Wow.
From the house, you know, when it went out. So that's, my wife has been talking like all weekend saying, oh man, it's such nice weather. It's so calm out there. We really should see a whale. And then sure enough, this morning, she sees a gray whale, the closest we've ever seen to the beach. We have neighbors that have lived out there for 30 years that have never seen a whale from their deck.
Oh, wow.
And we've seen them like multiple times now. It's like, because my wife has got really keen eyes to do that. So that's something you all have to keep an eye out for.
Well, that'll be fun. That'll be great.
So Ron's family's going out to Kamano on Easter weekend.
I gathered. So, I figured it out. I correct your clues.
Yeah.
Well, otherwise it would be pretty suspicious, like weirdly suspicious if John's like, and some guests, I want to pressure wash it before they come. And I'm like, I'll bring my pressure wash.
Yeah.
Yes.
If it were in fact some other family and I'm just out there, don't mind me.
Yeah, that could happen. We have other guests that we'll have to clean for as well. So that, you know, that's the thing about the place is we'd like to share it with folks. But whenever somebody comes out, we feel like we really need to clean it up really nice, nicer than when we go there.
So sure, yeah.
It's work. Anyway, so I was thinking that we would talk a little bit about one of the other podcasts we might be working on, and that segue into what we might discuss today. So Intrepid Heroes has two more episodes to be posted of I don't even remember what's the name of the, what do we go? Devastation
Arc.
Which I just remember I have to edit to post tomorrow as well. I forgot.
So, oh boy.
So I'll be doing that afterwards.
Yeah. So thanks everybody for a great show.
Yeah. So two more episodes of that. And then we were trying to figure out what we were going to do. And we thought we would do Scoured Stars. And then, Jason actually offered up something kind of as a filler to run this thing called Scum and Villainy for us, which is not a Starfinder thing, but it's very much a space thing. And so I thought that would be kind of fun. We're still got to clear up with the rest of our crew here, but hopefully by the Tuesday, which we plan for session zero, that'll all be clear.
Yeah.
Surprise.
But I... Yes. Well, I've talked to everybody about it. It just hasn't, you know, got to iron out all the detail things.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, not Tuesday and 2 days from now.
No. A week from Tuesday.
That's right.
Our normal.
Which is going to be less than a week from the release of this.
Yes.
Yes.
Sorry. I can't keep all the time jumps.
I know.
I would make a poor time
all the future
cop.
Stuff. All the future things. Yes. Yes.
We're not playing Continuum, so you're okay. Fine with that.
Which is a fantastic game, by the way.
It's so I mean, this is a tangent. I've read that, and it's like bonkers how detailed you're supposed to get with keeping track of your timeline. I've always wanted to try it, but I've never gotten around to it.
I did. I played a couple of games. So it's great. We're diverging now into a time travel game called Continuum. And one of the awesome mechanics about this game is that once you can time travel, right, there's not a lot of things that are a huge problem to you because you can just go back in time in order to fix it so it isn't a problem for you now. So how do you fix things? Well, you certainly can do that in this game. But as soon as something gets fixed, it goes into like a running list called your yet. Mm-hmm. There are things you are yet to do to make it so there's no paradox. And if you get too many things in your yet at one time, you start fragmenting apart in paradox. You're just sort of your to-do list is getting overwhelmed. I know a lot of us could really relate to that. But when your to-do list gets too long and you're not taking care of it, it creates a ton of problems. And it can create, that's one of the ways that you could attack somebody is by doing a thing that you know will have them have to fill their yet with a bunch of stuff in order to get it done. And that causes them to sort of fragment. It's a delight.
It's wild. Wild stuff.
Well, speaking of wild stuff, I was wondering, Jason, if you could share a little bit more about this game that you've offered to run for us.
Yeah, well, Scum and Villainy is a Forged in the Dark game, which means it's based off of the Blades in the Dark system, which is a bit of an offshoot from like Powered by the Apocalypse and so it's a sort of a narrative first kind of game. There are die rolls, of course, but the what you can do is sort of what you do is kind of informed by the story of how you want to do it. Like, you know, like, I want to do this. Well, I want to roll this stat, and that's because I'm doing it this way, right? That sort of thing. And then, you know, the die rolls sort of say, oh, you did it okay, but there's complications, or you did it really good, or you failed at doing it. You know, so there's all these sort of fun degrees of success in a lot of ways. But in essence, a lot of their Forged in the Dark games are heist games, a genre that I enjoy immensely. You sort of get a thing, you do it, you have a job, you get in there, it goes straight to the action, and then you can flash back to be like, oh, this is how I prepared for this very thing later on. And that all causes stress, and things taking wounds causes stress and all that kind of stuff too. So eventually you might, you know, flame out, but, you sort of do these sort of concrete jobs. Right, this is the thing you're getting paid to do, or whatever your goal. And once you do that, then you have some downtime in between to sort of cool off from that stress. So it's very episodic, you know. Although it can tell a story over a while, but normally these games are very episodic. And that's also something that I just kind of enjoy being able to kind of like bing bang bing bang bing. Blades in the Dark is a supernatural gothic-y kind of Victorian era kind of setting, and has, you know, you're a gang and you're doing crimes to of one fashion or another to make your name in the city. Scum and Villainy is a science fantasy space opera kind of game. You have a ship, it goes around, you do jobs to sort of keep your, you know, to pay for the ship and make a name for yourself in the galaxy. A lot of similarities. It's a pretty good port of the original system. I've run it a couple times, always had a blast with it. And so what I like, and what we can do, and this is something we can talk about when we do session zero, is the book has a sort of built-in setting. But it's not locked in. Like, I think we can play with the setting in any way we want. Whether or not we want to actually, obviously, the title of the game is a Star Wars reference, so we could play it as a Star Wars game. There's rules for basically being a Jedi in this game, right? Or we can tweak it a little bit here, and if we really wanted to, play it as a Starfinder game.
Oh, that'd be awesome!
Yeah.
I think that would be totally possible to do. Now the thing about it is that, you know, it is there is a sort of a galactic empire that is the big bad guy for the most part that you're sort of under the thumb of, and you're just doing your low level crimes and whatnot here and there. So we'll have to figure out a way to make that fit into Starfinder. But that's basically all in the session zero stuff. And, you know, sort of picking the tone, because what you do is you make a character, and then you make a group. Basically, what you sort of describe what your ship is, and what your ship is what it can do and what kind of jobs that you do. Are you smugglers? Are you rebels? Right. Are you this, that, nothing? One of the reasons I enjoy this kind of game, too, is because it lets you play an anti-hero of sorts, right? You know, you don't play what's called Scum and Villainy. You don't necessarily, or this is not an evil campaign kind of game. It is more of a scoundrelly kind of game, right? Scoundrels in Star Wars are fun. You want to be Han Solo? This is the game to beat, right? Like, you know, you get to be cool and dashing, but you're doing fun. You're breaking the law, right? But you are breaking a law that deserves to be broken. And that's the kind of like stories that I do enjoy.
Well, this is with the name like Scum and Villainy. Obviously, it leans very well into the Star Wars story, but it sounds kind of Firefly from your description.
Yeah,
right?
It's all of that kind of mixed in together, right? You know, if it takes inspiration from a lot of those space opera kind of things, right? One of the things you can be, you know, so this game does essentially have classes. They're called playbooks, but you pick up what you are, and that sort of gives you a menu of things to choose from. Pilot is being one of them, right? And that it is sort of a thing very much in the Firefly vein. You can be a pilot who's really good at piloting the ship and doing all sorts of maneuvers and that sort of thing. But there's also, you know, I think they're called speakers, and that's like Anara character from Firefly, right? So you're the social fate. You're the face of the group who may is on the ship because they, you know, are an ambassador to bringing people on and talking with, giving them honeyed words and then letting them go. But that, you know, but that doesn't mean you're the, you know, there's also another different playbook that's essentially the Han Solo type, the Mal from Firefly type. So yeah. I, you know, enjoy it. It helps, you know, these Blades in the Dark type games, I improvise a lot of, and it has the freedom for that, because, you know, what I do, all you really need to do is, like, this is the thing that you're being asked to do, or, you know, you discuss it with the group, what kind of job you want to do. You want to rob someone? Oh, here's some opportunities for that. How do you want to do it? Do you want to do this as a smash and grab? Are you doing it more subtly? Are you doing some sort of weird trickery, or somehow you're doing it with Jedi mind tricks or whatever? Great. And then, you know, I don't know what's going to happen beforehand. And then, you know, the players tell you the way to go. And from there, it just comes up like, oh, well, you failed that role. What's a good thing that can happen here that can really mess you up? Oh, this is when the bounty hunters show up, right? Oh, great. And that sort of complicates things. And I really feel confident in running a game like that. Easily sort of just sort of like bringing things in. And it's always sort of great when you're doing that and the players are buying into that and feeding, you know, because this can be a game where, oh, this is where I had the flashback where I go to meet my, you know, arms dealer. And we talk about how I, you know, buy this really big grenade. I'm like, oh, okay, great. Yeah. Now you're pulling it out and doing, right. You know, having that sort of narrative control kind of be spread out to everyone is very satisfying to me. I've talked a lot about that, but I think what we can sort of like generalize this a little bit and do talk a little bit about if you all like this kind of game, this kind of genre, and if you like the hero with the heart of, not hero with the heart of gold, but the rogue with the heart of gold,
mm-hmm. right.
trope, right? Because I think that can be sort of extrapolated to any kind of system, right? And, you know, what you're doing, whether it's Starfinder, regular Star Wars, whatever, you know.
No, I think it sounds like a lot of fun. And, you know, the interesting thing is I had a home group that started playing Fly Free or Die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we thought it was going to be just like that. But it turns, at least the first book, that's as far as we got through it. It turns out we were just kind of putting a no-win situations that weren't fun. So we didn't have a chance to have the heart of gold. We, whatever we did, messed something up for somebody else. So I think it's trying to do that thing, but we just didn't give it enough legs, or how it was being run didn't.
That's fair. Fly, Fear, or Die is meant you put in those no-win situations so you develop this personal hatred for the company that's putting you in these no-win situations to the point where you go and be like, well, now we get to stick it to that company. As we're working on, we start by, you know, we break away and we work on our own. And that's where you can kind of do, there's still sort of tricky situations to navigate because it's a, you know, a narrative that's presented to you. But, you know, eventually you get to the point where you're doing, you know, there is a big heist.
Right.
In like volume 4, I think it is meant to be a big heist. Okay. I mean, there's sort of like little heists here and there, but volume 4, I think, is the one of the bigger, like, break into this thing and impersonate some people and steal the thing that's going to stick it to the company that's been a total jerk to you this your entire life, right? And it's going to hurt their bottom line. And that's a sort of very much a leverage situation, right? Leverage is one I love the heck out of that show. And it's a bunch of criminals, people who have been criminals in the past, breaking the law for the good of the little person, right? Mm-hmm. And often they're not put into those sort of definitely no-win situations. They get complications, but they can always figure out the way to basically stick it to the bad guy and help the little guy.
Cool.
Yeah. So like I don't often like really enjoy the evil campaign. I've done it once or twice, and I think everyone probably has here and there. And it can be fun with the sort of the, if you do it the right way. Like I ran it's like the very first thing I ran in Pathfinder first edition was Council of Thieves, which is about sticking it to the Thrunes, right? And the devil infested Jellicles. But one of my players wanted to be a Thrune. So it was more, I didn't have to do much, but it's just basically like, well, I don't think that the way the Thrunes are running it right now, this town, are running it well, I'm going to run it now. So basically it's doing almost the exact same stuff, but doing it in a lawful, evil way instead of just I think doing an evil campaign, it is, lawful evil is probably the way to go that doesn't lean into just sort of people being psycho murderers and bastards to each other and, that kind of thing.
Well, a lot of the successful evil campaigns are really hinged around the lawful evil, right? You can be the bad guys, but you've got to have enough order to have people send you on missions that you will accept you will complete, rather than just kind of running off and doing your own thing and just
running amok. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The Hell's Vengeance campaign, I actually ran at the same time a good friend of mine was running the Pathfinder's Hell's Rebels campaign.
Right.
So he got to be a bad guy regardless. He was very happy about that, right? He was either the GM, and so he was all the villains, or he got to play the villain in our campaign, the campaign I was running. One of the things that I thought worked really well with that is that the stories were, like you talk about, they were kind of self-contained, even if they were over an entire adventure, right? It was, okay, well, you start in this town, you need to find out who are the good guys in this town and like bring them to justice, the lawful evil justice. Well, and then you get to the next town, which has already been reclaimed by the forces of goodness. You've got to pretend to be good just long enough to like sow a bunch of discontent and make it clear that things aren't as great there as they think. And you're doing some sabotage here and there. And you're in one place, you're collecting points to try to like put the iron grip under the city. And in the next one, you're trying to keep the points from accumulating where people are like, this is great and we love it. You're like, no, keep those points low. The fact that there were, one of the things I thought was really compelling about the game is that everybody had to work towards the same goal, because you're lawful part of the lawful evil, but the goals were all very different in different parts of the game. So it kept it feeling kind of fresh. I think that's one good of the things that works too.
Yeah, definitely. John, have you ever played like in an evil game?
I've not played in an evil campaign. My stepbrother always liked to play evil characters in our normal D&D campaign. He'd play an assassin, which was an evil character. And his whole thing would be about how to sabotage our group, which just ticked off the whole group all the time.
Yeah.
Why do you have to do that? And so this is the biggest memory I have of that.
Yeah.
So.
That's like the most important thing when you think about playing an evil campaign. You have to play it with the right group.
Yeah.
If people are just looking to be like, I just want to be evil and just mess with everybody all the time. No, you're not. You can't play a coherent game with that person. And I know there's like people that I play with every once in a while that I know I would never play an evil campaign with, because I know they would do their own thing and just mess it up. So that's the thing. But I think the anti-hero campaign is a little more freeing, a little more, you can play kind of with necessary. I mean, you should always play your games with people you like to play with and where possible and people that you trust. But this gives you a little more like, oh, well, everyone can still feel good. Like, as a player, it'd be like, oh, we're doing the right thing by opposing X, Y, and Z. Or, technically we're breaking the law. And maybe sometimes we're a little bit like, this is a bad guy, I'm just going to kick him into the engine because I don't want to deal with it. Then, yeah, that works. So you're an anti-hero. You don't have to be a goody two-shoes all the time, So if I were to say probably like, again, alignment's gone. We talk about evil campaigns and good campaigns. But like, the chaotic good character is just the sort of classic adventurer in a lot of ways, right? Like you're doing your own thing. A lot of the times you're not really sticking to the law, but you're helping people generally, right? You're not, you know, you get something out of it, but you know, you're saving, you know, the sheep from the dragon or whatever, you know, you're stopping bad guys. And so an anti-hero campaign can be a little bit like people who are more selfish, right? Oh, they're doing, oh, I'm just here for the money. But often they're doing it, you know, Han Solo's doing it for the money, right? He owes Jabba the Hutt a lot of money, and here he's being hunted. But he comes back at the end, right, to help Luke blow up the Death Star, right? He's not getting, he probably wasn't getting paid for that. He came because, you know, he liked Luke. He was a good guy at heart. He knows that the Empire is a clear and present danger, and especially to someone like him who is a smuggler, right, who wants to basically be able to move things illegally because it's only illegal because the Empire says it's illegal. And so he, you know, he's doing it a little bit out of self-interest, but, you know, but you love him because he's, you know, suave about it, and he is playing like he doesn't care, but like he goes into the Death Star to rescue Princess Leia. Like he didn't really need to do that. You know what I mean? Right. Like but he's like, oh, a princess. Like the great thing about playing that kind of character in a game is like, you get to make up your motivations in a way that's like, you see, mm-hmm. like you get to look at him like, we're here, we're going to go, we got to do this thing. And you got to like, well, how can I make this more? Oh, is it going to, oh, a princess? A princess will have a lot of money. This is going to be great. I'm all on board because if we save this princess, I'm set for life or whatever, right? And you can make these sort of like semi-selfish goals, but you're going along with the group and getting the job done, right? Mm-hmm. And so a game like Scum and Villainy is that. Like you are literally sort of about, you're about accumulating money, and everyone gets, you know, the group gets paid, and you sort of keep it or put it in like a stash essentially, right? And eventually, so for longer campaigns, how much you have in your stash at the end of that campaign sort of determines what kind of life you retire to, right? Oh, I've been saving up this money. Oh, that means I will live, you know, like a prince for the rest of my life on some distant planet. Or, you know, I've been constantly spending that money because I needed to, you know, bend my wounds or whatever, do my projects. Then you end up retiring with nothing, but, you know, except for your memories, I guess. So it's all about that. And, you know, there's a little bit about, you know, this, about what, you know, that's sort of the driving motivation of everyone. But then you've got this sort of side of like, why are you smuggling things? Why are you rebels? Why are you, you know, whatever.
Well, I mean, as much as the character motivations of the anti-hero campaign are important, but the background is... the ultimate antagonists are also pretty critical. As you mentioned, the difficulty perhaps in adapting Scum and Villainy to Starfinders, you need sort of an equivalent of an evil, the Empire or the Alliance or the somebody right. that you're going up against. Because if the head organization running things in the world is in fact all about, you know, entirely benevolent deeds and opening up orphanages and stuff, then if you're playing yeah. characters who are like, we're really going to steal from them and stick it to the man, then you're playing an evil campaign.
Then, yeah, I mean, yeah. yes, definitely. 100%.
Well, in Starfinder, you have a great protagonist if you want to, or antagonist, I guess, if you want to use it, the Islanti Empire, right? I mean, that's...
yeah. I mean, yeah, that's one thing.
They're big. They're out there. They're trying to take over everything. They hate everybody. And
I mean, from a point of view, the Vescarium is that too. If you ask Patras, they're going to say yes. the Vescarium is the evil Empire, right?
Yes. I mean, they are. I mean, you know, at least you know they were lawful evil, right? You know, they worship a lawful evil kind of god. But you know, again, we can eventually leave all that behind and so make it work. But so I mean, it's something we can discuss when we have everyone together about whether or not we want to do that or want to just go something, you know, something that's completely fake, you know, no one knows about. There's always the trick when you get a new setting, like the setting that's presented in Scum and Villainy, I'm feeding everybody the information. I mean, you know,
right.
John, you may read the book and may pick up some stuff too, but not everyone's going to be able to do that. And I'm like, oh, right. is this kind of world? What, you know, what do we do here? So well, it might be something, might be helpful to be like,
how about
in a
something
that we all know?
Different than that. How about if we go with like the Mandalorian setting?
Star Wars.
Yeah. Well, oh, Star yeah. Wars, I mean, but specifically,
yeah, 100%.
That version of it. Yeah.
Oh, that sort of time period.
Oh, wait. If we're going to record this and then post it, we probably don't want to do that, though. I think there's all kinds of IP stuff we might run issues with. I don't know.
I mean,
I'm not gonna put on my lawyer hat for fair use, etc. Legal disclaimer and
yeah.
Well, I think
it's like a fan fiction.
Yeah, I mean, don't people produce? I guess I don't know if there are that many out there, but there's got to be at least some Star Wars role playing game exists.
Yeah,
there's got to be at least one actual play for Star Wars.
Right, but we're not even using the Star Wars role-playing game. We're just going
to... We're using a system that picked a name to evoke Star Wars without actually doing any licensing for Star Wars.
They didn't need to do it. They can buy that. And, we can just also basically play, just say, this is essentially like a Star Wars, but so you know what...
The names have been changed. Right?
The names have been sort of and that's kind of what the... That's kind of what Scum and Villainy setting is. It's a little bit very, at least, when I have run it, it's very much like.
So I was looking at the classes when you mentioned that. Mm-hmm. So are the mystics the Jedis then?
Yes.
Okay.
They can get very Jedi powers and have the lightsaber weapon. Right. And so forth. Right. So.
Right. Yeah. I could see a lot of the Firefly roles in there very clearly. Yeah, that seems like a big
mechanics and and pilots and the other
and
ones
in the Stitcher, the Doctor, right?
Well, the Stitcher's right. Yeah. I mean, it's just you just kind of have to think about you mush the two together, Firefly and Star Wars, and you kind of get what this game is getting at.
Yeah. No, that'll be fun, and we as a group we can talk about what we want.
Exactly.
For the setting.
That's the thing that's important. So, I mean, we're sort of talking about what, what's an evil campaign, what's an anti-hero campaign, but, also to sort of talk about the importance of having the sort of session zero, especially when it's not, even if you are playing a sort of, written adventure, adventure path or whatever, even more so when you're not, when you're just sort of like, okay, this is what we're going to be. What do y'all want to do? It's part of the character creation to figure out what you want to do together and who you are to each other. Having this sort of session zero and talking about, like, well, this is the tone of the game. The tone's going to be heists and heist-like things, missions that you go on, jobs that you do. You're probably fighting up against a big bad government of some kind, space government, and you're all sort of, scoundrels with a heart of gold.
I like it. I like it.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. I already have character ideas. So,
obviously
they need to plant themselves in whatever setting we're going to use and what the other characters are going to play. That's why I have character ideas, plural. So
you got to have more than one. And what's interesting about this game too, is you don't there's stuff in here that's a little bit about are you, alien or are you, can you be a robot, a droid basically? Yeah. You can do kind of all that. It doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the mechanic part of your character. You can kind of just be like, oh yeah, I'm this or that, but if you want to say I'm this, but it gives me I'm an alien that has a very specific kind of power. Well, yes, then it kind of gets into the mechanics and you can kind of, create those for yourself. You don't have to necessarily pull them from a book, which is cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was, when we were discussing, kind of online what we're going to do, and Jason suggested talking about anti-heroes, Star Wars comes to mind, and I was also thinking about The Expanse. Have both of you seen all The Expanse?
Oh yeah, yeah. I haven't read the books, but I've seen the shows.
Have you, Jason? Have you?
No, I haven't seen. I started to read the first book, and I couldn't quite get into it. But I know I'm watching the show.
They're like big time anti-heroes. I mean,
that makes sense.
Going against the evil empire that doesn't like the way they're doing stuff because there's all these things going on in the background they're trying to deal with. Mm. A lot of politics, I guess. So
I mean, famously, isn't The Expanse kind of based off of a role-playing game campaign, a Traveler campaign, I believe?
Oh,
I had heard that. Yes. Yeah.
I mean, that may be apocryphal. But I feel like that is, I had The Expanse role playing game from Gurney.
I do. I have it.
Back you here still have it? Yeah. It was one of the ones I kind of had to shed in the move because I'd never played it and I don't know the setting that well, so I don't know if I ever would. But I think there's an intro that that it says that. If you look at the intro of that book, maybe because it's written by the two fellows who write The Expanse, and was like, oh yeah, The Expanse was born in out of a traveler campaign.
All right, you keep talking. I'm going to look for that.
Well, Ron, what other sci-fi shows?
It didn't take John very long. I didn't even get a chance to answer the.
No, keep talking. Well,
he's still got to look it up.
And when I think about that, it's all kinds of the tropes of stuff. The Star Trek rather than Star Wars is not you would think it doesn't lend itself very well to an anti-hero kind of campaign because there's no big overarching organization that does the that fills the role of the Empire or the Alliance or whatever. And in fact, it's sort of a post-scarcity sort of world where what are you accumulating anyway and so on. But a lot of the heist genre doesn't necessarily have to do with we are accumulating money just for money's sake. A lot of the heist has to do with we are doing sabotage or we're trying to advance a political position or something like that. And there are places within the Star Trek universe where you're like, oh, the Klingons, the Romulans, what have you, are sort of, they're the ones who are trying to stop what we're trying to advance. And we're sort of we're going to get it done without all the bothersome of the Prime Directive and all that. Yeah. We're going to get it done ourselves. That seems to be a difficult type of place to put an anti-hero campaign, but I think it could be a really rewarding one.
I bet you could essentially take the leverage paradigm and use it in and tweak it a little bit for a Star Trek game, right? I mean, you'd be like, oh, we're going here, we're going to help people who are getting somehow, they're in trouble. We have to do it in a way that shows that we're not here. Maybe what you do with this one, and to take it back a little bit, is you have a kind of a time travel Star Trek game that is kind of heist and rated because you are always on the run from whatever the temporal agency is in Star Trek, right? You're kind of like, they don't want you doing it, but you got to go back and you got to fix some things that aren't quite right or something like that. And then it becomes a heist thing.
Well, that's impressive. I said you'd have to really think about how to do that. And then you just do it, Jason. That's awesome.
Whatever. Ideas.
So here's the foreword for the book. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going to read a couple sentences because it kind of shapes it up. So this is by James S. A. Corey, which are the two individuals that wrote it. So it's a pseudonym for two people. Storytelling is a muscle. It gets stronger the more you use it. The Expanse has been through a lot of incarnations since the Muse first struck. It was a pitch for a Warcraft-like MMO, a book series, a TV show, and for a long run, it was a role-playing game campaign. So that's kind of where it started, it sounds like.
And I remember that.
They don't say specifically Traveler in that, but that's one that comes to mind. So
yeah,
I mean, it's the long-running space game. That's
Right. Yeah, exactly. If it wasn't Traveler, it was something of their own probably creation, a hack of something else. But I suspect Traveler.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I like Traveler.
I've never played Traveler. Or Reddit,
I never have either, actually.
I'd be curious to there's ever a new edition.
So the Expanse is very hard sciencey. The series. So is Traveler. Very hard science.
Yeah.
So it's kind of it's a D6 game as well, similar to this. But that's about all. I don't have any of my original Traveler stuff. Anyway, so anti-heroes. It sounds like a lot of fun to do, and I think. We had one player that was concerned that we would just be doing bad things all the time. But I think the rogue with the heart of gold approach, I like that. Which means, and this is something I was thinking about and we'll have to talk about when we have a session zero, that we're going to be doing all these small incremental steps. But there's got to be the way we stick it to the Empire, the big way that we blow up the Death Star for the Empire kind of thing as well. Or the massive heist. I just watched a movie last night called The Lift, where they steal 500 tons of gold from a bad guy.
Right.
So, so where do we do that kind of thing?
Yeah, we could come up with something ahead of time that kind of thing might come out through play.
Yeah. You come out with it.
Well, or I might have something in the back of my head. Yeah. That'll also have to come through play. I might, as you guys, as you make characters, I'll be able to, oh, well, you're connected to the, you know, the Navigators Guild or whatever. Right. So that'll give me an idea that, oh, you got to, they're trying to do this with a ship or something, and then you want to steal the coordinates. And that's all about sort of getting data, or it's, you know, a weapons theme, because one of you has a lot of ties to a weapons manufacturer. Yeah, it's going to have to be something personalized. So I won't know anything until you all make characters. And that's sort of, you know, again, one of the thing that just sort of jazzes me up is this idea, this potential of the beginning of a campaign when people are having yet to make characters and have yet to make ties to each other and you make ties to the world, what that's going to be and how that's going to look and what stories will spin out of that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
And we'll talk a little bit too about how long we want this to go for and so forth. So that'll tie into what happens.
And we also, do we have to ask for permission to do this from the network? Is that what's...
I kind of made a post that that's what we were doing. And Ryan said, oh, Scum and Villainy, like he was excited about it. So
I
think that means it's okay. You know, it's just the network branching out to other games, just like SN20 and everything else.
Yeah.
That's what all of us. I mean, we, as much as this is sort of a lot of Starfinder focus, I mean, how many different games have we branched out on just in today's episode? So,
we talk about stuff.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's great catching up with both of you. And I'm looking forward to now this will be like every week that we will probably be chatting because of our game recording time will be on the off weeks from this.
That's right. Wait, Jason's reconsidering now. It's like, oh, I got
Are you okay with that, Jason?
My headphones died. I'm sorry. And like, I couldn't do anything. They kicked out and they just kicked back in. So I didn't even. Did you end up doing the wrap up?
No. We were just talking about something else.
And I was like trying to like, where are my other headphones? And then they came back on. It's like, okay.
This is funny because I literally mentioned that because we'll be recording that on the off weeks from when we record this, we'll be talking like every week now.
Yes, that's right. That's when my headphones died.
And then suddenly you're like, oh boy, like you're looking for some, you're looking for the door. Or
I gotta.
I'm changing my mind. I'm thinking, what? What did we say? What did we do?
No. That was when my headphones cut out.
Yeah.
And then I was like, let me go to grab my plug-in.
All right.
Anyway. Well, sorry.
On that note, we will wrap up. I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this has been Digital Divination.